Don't get me wrong, I do like going into shopping centres. They are interesting. It's just perhaps when I go from one shopping centre to the next shopping centre, and they've got exactly the same shops with exactly the same computer-generated signs, it means I'm looking for other things. It's sort of like an interesting thing, I suppose, in when I'm looking at computer animations and stuff like that. Like I may notice a computer animated wall or some aspect which is particularly good, but because it's the same computer generated thing over and over again, it's very interesting. So we're going to talk a bit about interest and strategies here, but getting to my point about the overall strategy of production of things. Look, I can say there's a few shops, like there's Platypus Shops, a fairly funky shoe shop. I'm sure it's got an overseas branch, but they've certainly spent a lot of money in looking at the LED lighting and the actual laser cutting of the perspex, and the presentations of the shoes are excellent. My son bought a shoe there. It was, reasonably expensive, but we were paying for the shop fittings. Unfortunately, the shoe caused some blisters. It didn't fit all that well, but it was a very good shoe shop, and so I was interested when I saw the same brand shoe shop to go in and see it again, but unfortunately, my sort of interest sort of waned very quickly because I'd already looked at all the shop fittings. There was one where they, I think Colorado, they had a stream running through the shop and stuff like that. There was a shop I really used to like many years ago when I was buying, my kids were toddlers and I was buying stuff. It was a Kiwi shop. Kiwi is the Australian term for a New Zealand shop. And it was had all sort of angles and unexpected things, a counter in a difficult to access space, and there was a kid play area at the back. It had a really great design, and then when I walked into one recently, it was exactly like it. And of course, they had a consultant come in to tell them how to put their shops, and so I wasn't spending any money there anyway, so they haven't lost anything for it. So if you really want to get an unusual shop, and I sort of look for inspiration, sort of the oddity in it, you really have to get in your car and go into some of the smaller towns that commercial interests have missed. The actual population and the competitive edge hasn't actually crushed them so far. So I'm talking about 10 kilometres further up the mountain. When I say up the mountains, it's pretty flat, the Blue Mountains. But up the mountains here, there's in Springwood, there's some lovely shops, some sort of rather not that they're bad, but they set up questions in your head. At Chinese restaurant, a beautiful shop called Max Dax, which sells men's pants, working class, pants and stuff like that. The way it's displayed is a sort of a taste of yesteryear, and the sign is hand painted on wood, and another sign which got me thinking was the local gourmet bakery, and it had its motto underneath, quality, yes, and quantity. And I wanted to stop people. I said, isn't this a contradiction for you? And no, come on, keep on moving. But it does strike at a term. The sort of strategy I want to talk about is quality and quantity as an idea. In Peter Hill Explains, the fundamental issue here is that if you've maxed out on quality and quantity, surely you can actually cut back on the quantity a bit and increase the quality, or vice versa. You've got very high quality, surely you can take a few shortcuts and get more quality. So in terms of a graph of quantity and quality, it's a sort of a Bowden curve, and you can maximise one and not the other. There's highly unlikely, I would expect, to be a point where quality and quantity are both maximised. That's just a general thought. I would have thought, as soon as I saw that, I thought. However, there are strategies that By going for quality early on, you can actually get your systems up so that when you get resources, you can go up to a better version of quantity. Or in certain cases, going for quantity allows you to get sufficient production knowledge such that the cost of quality is not as high. So there are sort of trajectories where you can move one way or the other. So like in this podcasting game, I've realise that there's some unthinkable things like the cognitive organisation of my own brain and rehab. I've got to get that out and just have to keep on pushing things through. There are technologies which are out there which aren't worth it to do on short-term podcasts, but long-term, if I can go my master plan to actually have speech to text to website to Google to link, so you can search a word and that free text retrieval, the word, rather than you say the word, it searches the word, it can search the podcast for you and put you in a cross, because a lot of the podcasts cover a lot of topics in fairly random order, and it really is, because I'm actually thinking free text retrieval, it really needs also a free text retrieval mechanism. But there's a whole series of barriers there. So if I go for low quantity and very high quality, that's not necessarily a strategy to move through. And there's a whole lot of doors to go across. And so this quality and quantity thing is something to think about, and has presented itself on a number of projects all the way through. So I'm going to go through a back of quality and quantity, and they're necessary. Obviously, in some places, you want to get the quantity out there simply because of the area that you have to cover. You strategically have to cover a large area. And in this case, I have to competently cover all areas of teaching, so I present a sort of a large body of work which is assessed internationally to go forward, and critiqued and improved. To get that momentum up, I've got to get the quantity and also quantity up so that the actual cognitive training of my brain goes sufficiently fast. So let's go back. There is this saying, I heard it first attributed to Stalin, and that is that quantity has a quality all of its own. And of course, you can imagine the big Russian mass production of T-34 tanks and all that type of stuff. You can sort of see that in the conceptualization. You could believe it. But however, the actual statement is attributed to Napoleon, who had the first people's army, that is, an army of the populace in general. So he had a huge quantity of troops, so the other armies who were fussing about quality were actually, overwhelmed. And so Napoleon, looking at various strategies, and he wasn't short on strategies, he had artillery strategies, political strategies, conceptual strategies, but also this strategy of, in some cases, quality being supplied by the actual sheer quantity of French troops that he was able to amass against highly trained professional micro armies of other states, fragmented states. So that's the entire idea of, if you get sufficient out there, you've got sufficient numbers to get small gains over a broad front. That's a general idea. Then we sort of go back to different ways of management. So if you're producing one-off, you don't have to actually look at the time cost of doing all the little bits and pieces. But certain cases in history, you have to. Now, and there's also the strategic view of wanting to win. And a certain aspect I myself want to win. I'm not quite sure where or what. What I want to do is rush back in history to Rome versus Carthage. So Rome is in Italy. Most people know where it is. Carthage is in North Africa on the Mediterranean. I'm not quite sure what area it is. I'm probably thinking Tunisia, not Libya. Tunisia. I can't pronounce that. Tunisia. Again, this is reading things and never pronouncing it. You always get caught up. So, Carthage before Hannibal was a major sea power, and it essentially sort of linked onto naval nations that were coming around the Mediterranean, but it managed to get more ships and get more strategy and sort of left the Romans short-navied, and the Romans used to get clobbered by the Carthaginians. And Rome, which was a very focused thing, captured a Carthaginian ship, and they took it in, and they looked at there and they saw, oh, there's sort of lettering on some of the pieces of the ship, and it fits together rather well. And they realised that the Carthaginians had a system of manufacturing where the ships could be manufactured in multiple points and brought together and soldered together, pretty much like an ancient IKEA. They were almost flat-packed and put together rapidly. So the next year, the Roman army, the Roman navy was massive. They had a massive number of ships. Imagine ancient ships being put together this way, and they're out there on numbers, and this overwhelmed Carthage, and they won their sea battle. So this is sort of a quantity in order to deal with the quality issue. So look, a similar type of thing happened. England, when it was taking over France, managed to hit both on the head of getting a quantity and quality of ships out there. And the quality meant by producing sufficient quantity, they were able to actually focus in on the get sufficient industry up to focus in on the critical points which were destroying the ships to go down. And producing sufficient number of ships, they would see there was a sweet spot. 3 years after a ship reached its minimum maintenance time for about a few years and then went up to high maintenance. And of course, if you have a large number of ships flowing through, you're producing a large, at any point in time, you now have a large number of ships flowing through with that 3 year maintenance sweet spot. And this is something to look at the British shipbuilding and the top dog, underdog, the entire shipbuilding reached a scale which was industrially important. Come World War II, we have the issue of if you have an adversary and you're producing quality stuff, they can basically blow your quality out of the water. So if you can get a quantity up, you can actually have sufficient information or sufficient things to go ahead. So hopefully in these podcasts, as I improve, there will be some gems in there. I can harvest those gems, but if I did just only a few podcasts, that'd be all really good, small audience, and have a sort of errors in it. So we're talking about the Americans, and they were being blown out of the water by the German U-boats, and so they developed the Liberty ship system, which is a prefabricated ship, so they'd be built together in several points, put together just enough, and then fitted at sea. So the dry docks, the dock in which were put, were only there for a certain amount of time, and I think it was up to something like three a day. Cargo ships were being pumped out by the United States, and this simply overwhelmed any attempt by the Germans to blow them out of the water, so they're to actually go across. And if you're in an adversary situation, people are trying, in this case, trying to sort of block my way back to teaching by producing sufficient. I've got sort of the Liberty process going across, and of course there's technologies which we haven't even thought of in the area. Of course, the Americans applied this to a large amount of areas, and the basically had a matrix version of pouring money in for a general project idea and letting very many industries develop, sort of like a market system. They loved the market system and pushed it through. This is all very well, but then again we have the Americans sort of setting what they were doing by looking at the Soviet Union. So And this wanting to win and having technology is a serious thing. What I want to quickly say is the Bison bomber. So the Bison's the long-range bomber, which could fly bombs from Russia to America. And I think, what was it, 24, something like that? Whatever it was. They had only, say, 24, under 30 Bison bombers ever built. And at an air show where they were showing them off, they had, eight flew over, and those eight left, did a U-turn and joined another fleet of 10 flying over. So the Americans said, okay, they've got 28 at this point in time. And so they, for a flyover, but really wasn't that, it was 18 or something even less. And then the one U-2 flight over one field photographed all the Bison bombers lined up, and that was happened to be a very lucky shot. And so therefore they multiplied that by the number of, so they calculated a huge amount and went into overdrive building our B-52s and all the strategic bombing command. It was one of those things. So when you're going for quantity and quality, it's sort of a hard thing to do. And if you're sort of responding and trying to use that strategy up, your intelligence can often lead you astray. But one of the things I do want to talk about, all things military, because a lot of things military do percolate back into industry, is the Polaris missile. A game changer was submarine launched missiles, so you could actually sneak up really close to the enemy and launch a short range missile into their territory. And so there was spy planes over, photographed the Russian effort, and it was extremely advanced. And so the Americans had to produce in months a submarine based ballistic missile, and that was the Polaris missile, which is the dawn, or this is the popular science, dawn of GANT, project management, critical path, all these types of things. And so basically an open checkbook, and this way where you wrote which project is dependent against what, things which weren't dependent on it could be actually brought forward. So you can get a massive run of parallel projects called a critical path. So the projects which were, let's say your project for completion, of all the projects for completion, they've got sub-projects. And if those sub-projects can't begin to a previous sub-project, you get the minimum time, which I think in this case was 6 months or 9 months, from drawing board to exploitation. And of course, with that, the technology wasn't there, and so they had a spike which grew on the top of the missile to stabilize it, to get it through. So there's the idea of not perfect technology, critical path, and producing things in quantity. And sort of your quantity production, the massive production power of the United States, meant that you can use your quantity production and slow it up and focus it and reorder it such it can produce quality in a reasonable time, where it's not possible if you haven't developed a quality backbone to what you're doing. So these are all these quality and quantity in the Springwood cake shop, but there's got me thinking a lot. And my overall aim here is to produce sufficient, and to use this speech to text to website to free text retrieval loop. And there's an effort to try and get it, but then I have a cache of things to hit the button, and also some text, speech to text, and then text analysis of the text to automate the actual podcasting, so I can sort of podcast on the go, hit it, and it's actually published or seen and published. to get a quality and obviously eventually market. So this is the going for the quality, moving across to the quality again, then moving back across. So if you imagine it, it's a rather than just optimizing in an outward belly-shaped curve, in an inward innie curve, you move in an arrow back and forth from quality to quantity, back and forth. So going for high quality opens up more quality opportunities. More quality opportunities open up more quantity opportunities if you move back and forth. So that's the overall strategy. It may make sense to some people, project managers out there. That will make a lot of sense, what I'm trying to do. And thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on doing, analysing, and finally teaching science. Thanks for listening.